Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you to focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to be back after a little while off. I can't remember last time I was here. It's been a while. Coming to you from the boiler room deep inside the McBurney compound here. Somewhere in middle America. We'll just leave it at that. That's about as close as we want anyone to come. Plenty to talk about. Should I start with Canadian bacon, or is that politically incorrect to mention Canadian bacon? I don't think it's been allowed to be mentioned, and I think it's about time. Now, I know that the president is in negotiations trying to rework the new NAFTA, apparently with Mexico and maybe with Canada. And so I don't want to bring anything up that would make anyone uncomfortable. You know that I never would want to do that. Never. He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. But what's the deal? Should I say it that way? That's like a really bad comedian. What's the deal with Canadian bacon? Huh? What's the deal with Ovaltine? Anyway, has anyone ever just mentioned maybe in passing to the Canadians that's just ham? That's not bacon? And if that's what you think is bacon, I feel sorry for Canadians if they think that's bacon. They should come south of the border and see what we've done with the pork belly. I'll tell you what, it's a whole different animal.
Same animal.
Well, I guess it's the same animal, but anyway, I don't think it's ever been mentioned in polite company, the fact that the Canadians have ham mistaken for bacon, and nobody really says anything about it. Perhaps they've been deprived of real bacon all this time just because nobody wants to hurt their feelings. So anyway, I'll leave that aside. Maybe I'll let what's Trump's kid's name? His son-in-law? Maybe I'll let Jared Kushner introduce that idea gently to our Canadian brethren up there and try to work that out. I just hate to see anyone deprived of American bacon. It makes me feel, well, I feel a little bit guilty if I'm allowed to have it. And they don't even know it exists. They have this mistake. All right, Texas. Let's go to Texas. We'll leave our fine neighbors to the north to fend for themselves in the world of pork-sourced delicacies. And we'll move to Texas, where Texas is set to export more oil than it imports for the first time ever. Now, I found it somewhat surprising that Texas imports oil at all, but they do, apparently. But for the first time ever, from our economics file, this is a report from oilprice.com. Texas Gulf Coast oil terminals sent abroad more crude than they received in April. For the first time ever. Exports over imports welled to an impressive 470,000 barrels per day. Wow. Texas is on track to become the biggest oil producer after Russia and Saudi Arabia, pumping almost 6 million barrels per day in 2019. That's the project. And by the way, Texas, Russia and Saudi Arabia are nations. Texas is just one of our 50 states. Just to give you some idea of how enormously powerful and prosperous America is. One of our states is a third behind two of the biggest oil-producing countries on the planet. So we got that going for us. Now, there's other things that may not be going so well. Like the state of parenting in America. Parenting, which I know it's not even a word, it's a made-up word. the state of child rearing in America, the inability of people to raise their children properly. I got into a bit of a tiff with a lady. I'll just leave it at that. She was a lady. She was upset at the fact that I used corporal punishment in the training of my children. I was at the dinner table with this lady and a friend, and my children were right there. And she actually said to my children, "Don't listen to your father when he talks about disciplining children with physical violence." And they looked at me like, they thought I was going to go off. But I didn't. I kept my cool. And I explained to her how we train the children with my glasses. You know, I would hold the children when they were young, 6, 9 months old, something like that. They would reach for the glasses, and I would snap their finger and say no until they cried. And so she gets upset with me saying I'm treating my children like animals, training my children like a dog or some kind of animal. And I noted to her, "Why is it that all you atheists who insist we evolve from animals and that we're just animals, when you hear about the methods Christians like me use to train our children, you know, like corporal punishment, you act all offended that we're treating our children like animals? You people think we are animals, for crying out loud." Well, she got kind of red in the face on that, after that. Didn't show up for any more dinners either. Anyway, so here's the thing, folks. If I'm sitting across the table from a heathen and their kids are there, I would never tell their kids, "Don't listen to your father" or "Don't listen to your mother." I would never say that. Even if they're the worst parents on earth. Even if it was Meghan McCain and her husband, if she even has a husband, or her lesbian whatever, if she has anything like that. Even Meghan McCain, I would restrain myself in front of her children. I would never tell her children not to listen to her. That's just beyond the pale, that's all. That's uncivilized, in my opinion. So anyway, but I did have an opportunity to share with this young lady some things that she had never thought about in her life. And she's been around for quite a while. Not to say that she's old or anything. She's a little older than I am, though, and that's quite a while. Especially to not understand some of the basic, simple, fundamental truths of life. So she got exposed to some of that. And I guess I made her uncomfortable. I didn't mean to. It's just an occupational hazard. All right. Now, let's go deeper into the economics file. Should I do that or should I talk about lying in state? I'm going to wait on lying in state because it's a big topic. It's a big issue. I'll wait on that. I've already dispatched with the Canadian bacon controversy. So I'm glad to get that out of the way. Have you ever heard anyone say that about Canadian bacon? It's as if we're not allowed to talk about it. All right, now, there's a lot of fruit and vegetables are being wasted, according to ITV.com. A shocking amount. Let's see, more than a third of farm fruit and vegetables never make it onto shop shelves because they are misshapen or the wrong size, according to research. A university study estimated that over 50 million tons of fresh produce grown across Europe is discarded annually, mainly because of how it looks. Well, it's a shame. It's a shame. But the thing is there anybody starving in Europe because of a lack of fruit and vegetables? There is not. And so you know what this tells me? That we, as civilized humans, have become so proficient at producing fruit and vegetables that we can actually choose just the good-looking stuff to eat. And the thing about fruit and vegetables is, I mean, it's not like you can... let me just read further before I go and get ahead of myself. If you're feeling guilty about eating fruit and vegetables based on how it looks, and I'll admit that when I go into the grocery store, I try to pick the best-looking fruit. Not that I do that very often. No, but when I do, I have to admit, as guilt-ridden as it makes me feel...
I don't feel guilty.
You don't feel guilty about that. I feel terrible now that I read this. But I'll squeeze the fruit, and I'll try to look for the best fruit. And if it's got some kind of defect-looking, maybe, I don't pick that fruit. So anyway, the research paper described food loss and waste as one of the great scourges of our time. Because they say 10% of the world's population is chronically hungry. That's what they say, and that's probably true. But I mean, just reading that, that says that 90% of the world's population is not hungry. Which I don't think there's ever been a time in human history when that could be said. So we got there's something, that's something good. The study was conducted by researchers at the University of Edinburgh. Edinburgh? Is this in England? Edinburgh, isn't that where the climate? Well, maybe not. Maybe it was a whole different school. Anyway. Anyway, they say it's a scourge. I think it's a sign of prosperity and efficiency in food production. And I would guess that the study was conducted, no matter where it was conducted, it was conducted by guilt-ridden leftist homosexualists and creeps, is my guess. That's just my guess. Why would I guess that? Well, to be a researcher at the University of Edinburgh, you pretty much have to sell your soul to the devil. Unless you're closeted. Anyway, they want to encourage these guilt-ridden leftists, homosexualists, and creeps. They want to encourage the sale of more ugly vegetables. And they also suggest a greater use of misshapen products, perhaps in chopped or processed foods. What, you think we already don't do that? Where do you think the ugly carrots go? They're the ones that are chopped up into the can of the, you know, the misshapen vegetables, except for the peas. You can't really do much with a misshapen pea. It's already chopped up. they say perhaps the... Oh, and we could have sales at a discount to charities. So what is the charity going to do with all this fresh fruit and vegetables? How are they going to get that to the people, who the 10% of the hungry people?
The homeless should eat the misshapen
fruit. That's right. I think the homeless already do eat the misshapen fruit. Because let's admit it, folks, the misshapen ugly fruit ends up out in the back in the dumpster behind the supermarket. And that's where the homeless go, and they crawl up in there and do their thing. But there's a short shelf life on this fruit and vegetables. I mean, you can't just ship it to Africa or Syria or Iraq. Besides, you'd have to get through the criminal gangs that run those countries. You couldn't get the misshapen fruit and vegetables beyond the terrorists, who are the reason those people are hungry in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's not that there's a lack of food. It's bad government and bad religion. Yeah. In fact, I just had that conversation with a friend of mine at church. And you know, we were talking about GMOs. I don't know what my problem is with this particular friend of mine. I always veer into a conversation where I know I'm going to insult him. It's as if I want to insult him so that we won't have a conversation. That's not my intention at all. It just happens that way. I struck up a conversation about sugar beets in Colorado, which is a fascinating topic, by the way. This state was built on sugar beets and silver mining.
And PBS?
Yeah, I learned it on PBS. I did. I watched the sugar beet. Yes. No, it will be destroyed by PBS. But they had a good show on sugar beets. I had no idea. Anyway, they're reintroducing sugar beet farming in Colorado because it's becoming more economically feasible. And one of the main reasons is GMO sugar beet seeds. The same as I was talking about the corn last show. The sugar beets are Roundup ready. They're already resistant to glyphosate, so you can use the herbicides that kill everything but the sugar beets. So now it could be that we start growing sugar beets in Colorado that compete with the sugar cane, because in a lot of the sugar cane growing areas, there's bad weather, bad government, and bad religion. And so we may be able to do it again. And one of the reasons is GMOs. And as soon as I mention GMOs, I'm like, why am I mentioning GMOs? I know my friend doesn't like GMOs. He doesn't like GMOs, he doesn't like pesticides, doesn't like herbicides. So anyway, how did I get off on this? The study, let's get back to the waste of fruit and vegetables, as if you didn't feel bad enough about yourself already. You're wasting misshapen food. The study was published in the Journal of Cleaner Production. And who isn't for that? I'm for cleaner production, but I'm not for laying a guilt trip on anybody about the fact that we are so prosperous. Despite our failings, we're so prosperous that we can pick and choose the fruits and vegetables we eat. That should be something to be proud of. But we're incapable of being proud of anything anymore. Well, but then there's a lot of deep, dark reasons for that that we're going to get to. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we're back. Yes, I was going to play the whole song, maybe. Sometimes I just want to listen to the whole song. It's a good song. It was a fun song. So I want to get to the deep, dark. Why is it that we feel guilty about, or at least the news media assumes that we can be made to feel guilty about wasting fruits and vegetables and the fact that 90% of the people on the planet are not hungry, and we're supposed to wring our hands over the 10% that are, and act as if it's our fault because of glyphosate and Roundup and our enormously prosperous economic advancements. And well, it could be expected that we could feel guilty because we're confused as a people, and we're, as a society in general, as a nation, we've lost our national way. There's things we feel guilty about, you see. Like injustice and the murder of innocent children and all these things lurking and percolating and bubbling under the surface, causing angst in society. And the left tries to distract themselves by feeling guilty about stupid things that don't matter. Like the fact that we waste misshapen fruits and vegetables that would rot on their way to Africa anyway. In fact, Aretha Franklin to me is an example, a living codex of what has occurred in America just in her lifetime. She was born early 1940s, either before or during World War II, and she passed away recently. And Aretha Franklin reminds me of America. She went from a really cute little girl belting out gospel, blowing people's minds with her level of talent. She went from that to a very successful woman who became enormously prosperous and enormously wealthy and enormously influential. And as she matured into the later stages of her life, she became a woman, a matriarch, who would invite to her funeral a collection of the worst human beings on the planet and ask them to speak at her funeral. Jesse Jackson? Louis Farrakhan? Bill Clinton? Barack Obama? Hillary Clinton? The list goes on. The fact that she would want her name in the church that she actually attended in Detroit, that she would want her name in the mouths of these disgusting, foul, evil enemies of the living God, to me, is Aretha is representative of America. Aretha lost her way somewhere along the way. But I'm sure her funeral was more entertaining than John McCain's. At least there were some people there who could sing, I suppose. There was the stripper and the Bill Clinton gawking at the... See, Bill Clinton was at both. Bill Clinton was gawking at the stripper at Aretha's funeral and then glad-handing all the people he's robbed so efficiently for so many years as McCain was lying in state. I want to address that, by the way. So now if you've listened to the broadcast for any serious amount of time, you know that I want a big funeral. I have a lot of people, friends of mine, they just want to be cremated and get it over with. I talk to family members, friends. Well, I just want to be cremated. Don't make any big deal. Now, me, I want a big deal. I want a Cadillac hearse, and I want it to be this year's model, right? I want a casket that's actually ornate and carved, okay? I don't want just a pine box covered with, no. And I want to invite everybody to come.
You're going to get beat or kill.
I don't want a casket made out of beetle kill pine that was just dragged out of the forest. I want it made out of some exotic deciduous wood from Africa or Asia or something. So I do want a big deal, okay? And I want to invite everybody just so I can make some people feel bad, because I know some people won't be able to come. And not through any fault of their own. It'll be work or life or whatever. They'll be out of the country. They'll be traveling, whatever. They're not going to be able to come. And I want them to notice that, I couldn't make it to Doug's funeral. I feel bad. I just want them, and then the people who do come, I want them to feel good about themselves, that they came and they were able to come. But one thing I do not want to do is lie in state. I do not want to lie in state. To me, that's ostentatious and embarrassing. And the thing with Aretha Franklin was a little weird and creepy, to be honest with you. With the changing of the clothes and the shoes, that was a bit much, I'm sorry. So it just seems to me that a decent human being wouldn't want to force other people to look at your dead body. That's all. And for John McCain to have orchestrated such an elaborate funeral event over so many days, and the processions and the rope lines and the airplane trips with the casket and to the church and to the Capitol and back to the church, and they stop at the Vietnam vets. It's like, John, we're already getting sick of you. You only been dead for a few days. We're tired of hearing about it, for crying out loud. Let's see. Should I get to John? Well, before I get to John McCain, should I at least want to mention in passing that Donald Trump has crawled so far up inside the heads of all the establishment elites in politics that they could not help but make mention of him at John McCain's giant pagan worship ceremony. They couldn't help it. And Meghan McCain, well, I'll get to her. Should I get to it now? I guess I should get to it now that I mentioned it. I was going to do this later, but maybe this fits now. John McCain, I read, for CNN reported back in 2004, John McCain took on Hillary Clinton in a drinking contest in Estonia, and both of them together knocked back 4 shots of vodka, and Hillary was declared the winner. And, any decent human being would never eat or drink with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Herodias Clinton, I would not have a drink with her. And the fact that John McCain did have a drink with her, but could not force himself to have a drink with someone like, someone like me. Well, I couldn't blame him for not having a drink for me, actually, because a drink with me, because I've said a lot of bad things about him over the years. But let's say someone who's a lot better than me. I have to think of someone who's better than me. That's difficult to do
Don
on
Lemon.
The spot.
No.
Yeah, no. Don Lemon. No, wait. John McCain would definitely drink with Don Lemon. And he would drink with Ted Kennedy. Listen to this. Speaking of Ted Kennedy. Hold on here. Ted Kennedy. We have a report here from Breitbart in the politics file, where we put the Hillary Clinton drinking contest aside. We go deeper into the politics file. What's that now?
Yeah, real.
That's real. Well, it's CNN.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's real. But they imply that John McCain enjoyed drinking with Hillary Clinton, which is a shameful thing. And it tells me a lot about the man's character that he would drink with Hillary. But do you think he'd have a drink with Cal Zastro? Cal Zastro, who smuggles Bibles into China at the risk of his own life, and he's a missionary. That's what he is. He's a missionary. Would John McCain have ever sat down and had a drink with Cal Zastro? No, he wouldn't have. I knew I could think of somebody better than me.
Okay.
but let's go to someone worse than me. Ted Kennedy. John McCain. And Breitbart reports that McCain was killed by glioblastoma 9 years to the day after Ted Kennedy died from the same cancer. How about that? How's that for irony? Yes, August 25th, 2018. That's when McCain died. August 25th, 2009. That's when Kennedy died. 9 years to the day. Uh-huh. Yeah, now we know that God hated John McCain and Ted Kennedy. We know that. Now, he loved them enough to give them an opportunity to repent. He loved them enough to send his son to give his life in hopes that John McCain and Ted Kennedy would humble themselves and repent and ask for forgiveness from God. And God loves us enough to have sent John McCain and Ted Kennedy to hell together. 9 years to the day. So here's the thing. I don't change my tune about someone just because they died. Start saying nice things about them. I hated John McCain. I hated Ted Kennedy. Still hate him to this day. I'm very sad that they're frying in hell for all of eternity. That's not a pleasurable thing. But I did hate them, and I continue to hate them. And I find it ironic that they died 9 years apart to the day. 9 years. Do you think this was God's judgment on John McCain and Ted Kennedy? Well, not in the sense that God specifically struck McCain or Kennedy with the glioblastoma that eventually killed them, no. But in the sense that God has set the universe up so that evil, wicked men who destroy other people, like John McCain and Ted Kennedy, God has set it up so they will not live forever. God has sentenced every one of us to death for our sins. John McCain and Ted Kennedy included, and it just so happens that it was 9 years to the day that the mechanism inserted into the system by the living God designed to keep tyrants and thieves and murderers from living forever took two of America's greatest liars, thieves, and murderers, John McCain and Ted Kennedy, 9 years. Now, I got more from the story from Breitbart. Listen to what Breitbart says. McCain and Kennedy had been on opposite sides of the ideological spectrum. Ha! Really? Okay, Breitbart, you're either a bunch of suckers or you're liars or you're just naive fools who just buy into the zeitgeist, the narrative as presented. McCain and Kennedy worked together to steal more money, kill more people, and sustain more criminal activity than any two men in history, quite possibly. They worked together. What else does Breitbart say? Ted Kennedy. No, here's a quote from McCain about Ted Kennedy. McCain said, Ted Kennedy has this unique way of doing combat on the floor of the Senate. As soon as we stopped making our speeches, he'd come and he'd put his arm around you. We could be friends and work together and colleagues and friends for the good of our
friends and our family and ourselves and our retirement funds. I mean, I'm sorry, for the good of the country, is what I meant to say.
Remind me of Pilate and Herod, Pontius Pilate and King Herod. They became friends after they worked together to sentence Jesus Christ to crucifixion. They became close friends. And John McCain and Ted Kennedy apparently got along just fine after hours. Let's see. Kennedy was at the public trough for 47 years, never had a legitimate job in all of that time. McCain bellied up to the trough 31 years ago. And so he's never had a legitimate job in 31 years. He's been a thief and a liar. And let me just get back to Meghan McCain, okay? Meghan McCain's pathetic lashing out at the funeral. At the funeral, for crying out loud. That's another thing I want at my funeral. I don't want you trying to get even with people at my funeral. Focus on me, please. But not Meghan. She has to focus on Donald Trump and anyone else who ever pointed out the truth about her horrible father. She's the lowest. By the way, Meghan McCain is the absolute lowest form of a Republican and quite possibly the lowest form of a human being. She's a person who's personally against all kinds of immorality, especially child killing. She says she's personally against it, but she's not willing to start a fight about it. She's certainly not willing to make anyone uncomfortable about it. And she's totally okay with homos. She loves homos. In fact, her father was a homo, I think. Maybe. Well, if he was, that wouldn't offend her at all. Anyway, John McCain, yeah, he was a veteran. Okay, he survived a prison camp. He didn't die. Okay. Well, he didn't kill his captors and liberate his comrades, but he didn't die. And I guess he didn't give any secrets to the enemy, so that's something. And he was tortured. But anyway, I don't grovel before vets. I know that a lot of you in the audience, if you were never served in the military, you feel that you can't say anything about a veteran. And you have to grovel before John McCain because he was in a prison camp for 5 years. Well, I don't have to grovel. So I don't like the guy. And what he became after his honorable service in the United States military, it basically eliminates the possibility of me giving him honor for anything else he ever did because of how much evil he did. He presided, along with Ted Kennedy, over the greatest mass murder in all of human history. He consented to it. Oh, he made noises like it bothered him. He was uncomfortable with the whole idea of butchering all these children. He made noises about it. But in the end, year after year, he put his name to it. He signed it along with Ted Kennedy, along with Bill Clinton, along with George W. Bush, along with Barack Obama, along with Donald Trump. They have all together become unprofitable. There is none that does good. No, not one. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. I'm glad to be back. Okay, I've vented off on John McCain about as much as possible. I hope I haven't made any of you uncomfortable. Apologize if that's the case. Let's move on, because he's had enough press this week anyway. See, I was going to play some Aretha Franklin too, but we don't have any, and then I was not motivated when I realized who all she invited to her funeral. I'll be honest with you, I felt somewhat let down because I had no idea about Aretha Franklin's politics ever. I just never knew, never heard, never paid attention. Yeah. And I knew that she had come up through Motown out of the churches, right, down in Memphis. Mm-hmm. I had heard that story, so very disappointing. All right, so let's move on. Have I spoken enough evil of the dead? All right. I do want to get to the tragedy of human existence, the tragic state of us. I do want to address that because at the beginning of the summer, I called this summer the summer of blood, and it's lived up to its name. If you followed the news through the summer, it's been a bloodbath all around the country. People, innocent people's lives being taken on a daily basis at levels that are shocking and disconcerting. I mean, levels that approach actual war numbers. We're talking casualties that are in the level of, it's as if America were actually at war, but we're at a war with ourselves. Or at least the criminal element in America is being allowed to go to war in our streets, amongst, in our communities, amongst our, the innocent women and children. And even more than that. Anyway, I want to get to that, but let me get, I didn't want to miss this because this is a significant story. 9-year-old Jamel Miles. I have a report here from USA Today. Jamel Miles, 9 years old in Colorado, committed suicide a couple of weeks ago. USA Today reports that Jamel Miles died of suicide. Like cancer, right? Or, he died of suicide? I don't like the way the media puts that. They put a soft edge on it there. Jamel Miles, as far as we know, killed himself, and I don't actually know that, to be honest with you. All I know is what I've heard. But they say Jamel Miles died of suicide. His mother said on Facebook that he had been bullied by classmates. So, I mean, there's a commentary on the public schools. I'm not going to let it go by. You put your kids in the public schools, and they're normal, decent kids, you can expect that they'll be bullied by some of the little bastards in there. The evil, demonic, satanic little bastards in the public schools. The same types who bullied me and my brother are going to bully your kids. So just don't do it, number one. So Jamel says he was bullied. 9 years old, he commits suicide. That should shock the world, and it has, I think. The mother told the local TV station here in Denver that her son was bullied because he had come out as gay. So a 9-year-old fourth grader comes out as gay, huh? So if I'm the police, the first thing I'm going to do when I hear that is I'm going to start investigating the family. I'm going to find out who's been either molesting this kid or exposing this kid to pornography. How is it that a 9-year-old is thinking about their sexuality in any way? Except maybe they realize they want to play doctor. Maybe they realize something's going on. But to come out as a homosexual at 9, I'm immediately suspicious that someone is abusing this child. That would be my initial response. Do you think the police are even allowed to think that way anymore? I hope they are. So that would be my... So now I'm suspicious of the kid's family. They say he committed suicide. Well, now that I know that he was pondering his sexuality at the age of 9, now I'm suspicious of the family. I would want to investigate. The Denver Public School District, they've come out with a statement. They're deeply committed, of course, to dignity and respect. They're committed to all sorts of sexual orientations, gender identities, transgender status. They're all about a safe and welcoming environment. So they issued the standard leftist platitudes that they issue whenever people are slaughtered in their midst, or they find out half the kids in the school have gonorrhea or syphilis, or a teacher molests and rapes a bunch of children. They have the same statement, they just change the platitudes in order a little bit, and they issue it. It's all about safe. They're about safety, welcome, transgender, orientate, all of that.
The district reminded everyone that they have training and policies to fully respect gender identity, including the use of preferred pronouns in and restrooms. USA Today reminds us that 3 out of 4 lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and or queer youth have searched online for information about depression. That's more than double the average, the number of normal kids. And you know why? It's because these kids are generally being molested and abused. Children who come out as gay, well, I'm sorry, I've met a lot of gay guys, and I can't think of one of them that didn't tell me they weren't molested as a teenager. I can't think of one. And I've known several, maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen that I've actually conversed with in depth about their life. And they've all told me the same story. So anyway, I guess that's all I've got to say about this. Anyway, it's a story that's gotten a lot of people's attention, I think for the wrong reasons. And as usual, the leftist news media insists on attempting to make all of us normal people feel guilty about the fact that a 9-year-old killed himself and that he was allegedly gay. Instead of focusing on the fact that we should all be shocked that a 9-year-old would have the mental capacity to even try to think about killing themselves. I mean, I remember being 9. I don't think I could even understand the concept of suicide, let alone ponder it. But then again, I also didn't really comprehend sexuality or think about it all that much. And maybe the 9-year-olds are thinking about and pondering and seeing and experiencing things that maybe we all need to stop and figure out what's going on there. What are these 9-year-olds seeing and doing and experiencing? What the hell is going on? Maybe we need to stop and say that. And it's not about bullying queers. That's not what it's about. All right. Man. I don't think I want to do the... Well, I guess I'll just bulldoze through the rest of it here because I'm pretty much I'm committed. There's a movement called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. This comes to us from the Culture File. It was founded by Les Knight. I'm not making that up. His name is Les Knight. And about 30 years ago, he founded the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. And he could have saved us all a lot of time if he'd have just followed his own advice about 30 years ago. But instead, we're reading an article about how he wants to return Earth to its natural splendor and end the needless suffering of humanity. And he says, that's a happy thought. He says, we should stop having kids. We should allow the human race to die out. He says, we shouldn't give in to natalist propaganda. Did you get that? Natalists. That's what we are. We believe it's good to have kids. We're natalists. And we're propagandizing our children. He says, we receive natalist propaganda almost from birth. And people generally encourage breeding. Okay, I'm guilty, Les Knight. I'm a natalist, I guess. But he says we're not taking care of the people who are already here. So how can we continue to create more if we're not taking care of those that are already here? And I say to Les Knight, first of all, I don't need you trying to lay a guilt trip on me. And when it comes to taking care of the people that are already here or neglecting to do so, speak for yourself. Hey! Hey! Woo! Everybody rock down! Do you feel like trying? I feel the sound of glory. But does it feel like love? Like a true now falling. Fast in love. Lay your way down the radio. Are you ready to call it? I wanna let go!
Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's good to have you here. And it's good to have you out there. Thanks for tuning in. Three common sexually transmitted diseases hit record highs last year, according to U.S. News and World Report. That's right, the ever-popular chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis are all at sky-high records, and gonorrhea is showing signs of becoming resistant to all antibiotics used to treat it. This is Jonathan Merman, the director of the CDC's National Center for HIV, AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, Sexually Transmitted Diseases, and Tuberculosis Prevention. Why are they lumping tuberculosis in with AIDS and Hep and gonorrhea, syphilis, tuberculosis? Excuse me? See, this, I don't understand that.
Arthritis.
Yeah, what about arthritis? Heart disease. How come that's... You know what it is they tend to equivocate. They don't want to make any moral statements about anything. So if they grouped all the diseases, only the venereal diseases, that might seem judgmental. So they throw tuberculosis in there just so they can appear to be neutral on any moral judgments about everyone who's getting all these sexually transmitted diseases. All right. So... that's it. I just wanted to report on that, just so you know. VD's out of control, and it's because of the ubiquitous pornography everywhere and the lax attitudes towards sexual immorality, adultery, and fornication. That's what it's all about. And that can destroy a civilization. I mean, these diseases could end up wiping out significant swaths of the population. If we don't all lose our minds first as victims of various episodes of mass hysteria, it's a case in point here from the Decline and Fall file, Brown University has censored its own study on transgendered youth. They had a study, they put it online, they pulled it down. Why? Because the study made all the queers and the freaks and the deviants and the perverts and the sodomites upset. The perverts are concerned that the findings might, quote, invalidate the perspectives of members of the transgendered community. We certainly wouldn't want to invalidate any of their perspectives. There were apparently complaints that the research was transphobic. Transphobic. Phobic being an irrational fear. So are you irrationally afraid of people transitioning from male to female? If you feel like your fear is irrational, then you need a better education. Because the fear of people mutilating themselves and then asking you to tell them it's okay, that's a legitimate fear. It's not irrational. That's some freaky stuff, man. That should freak you out. You want to cut what off? And then you want me to invite you to the Christmas party like nothing ever happened? I'm afraid I can't do that. That should freak you out, folks. You're not irrational if you're homophobic and transphobic. It's sick, nasty, disgusting stuff. It's okay to be afraid that they're going to destroy our civilization or maybe harm your children. That's what scares me. I have children, and I'm afraid that these sexual deviant perverts are going to somehow, my kids are going to move out of my house and get a job, and they're going to meet these people. They're going to have to interact with these freaks. And it scares me, all right? That's all. Anyway, the study, the Brown study that has been so controversial, examined what it called rapid onset gender dysphoria. There's one for you. That's when a teen suddenly begins identifying as transgender.
Suddenly,
yeah, despite having never previously questioned their sexual identity. The study said that the onset of gender dysphoria seemed to occur seem to occur in the context of belonging to a peer group where one, multiple, or even all of the friends of the kid have become gender dysphoric themselves. Imagine that. Is this not something that I've actually said on the air? That when you get everybody talking about this stuff, you're going to have more and more confused little kids going along with it. It's called mass hysteria. That's what it's called. So parents described a process of immersion in social media, binge watching YouTube transition videos.
Yeah.
Did you get that? Teenagers binge watching YouTube videos of other teenagers transitioning. And excessive use of Tumblr. Tumblr, I think, is one of those homosexual dating apps. I think. I'm not sure what that is. And then all of a sudden, shock of all shocks, Shazam! Their kid becomes interested in being gender dysphoric. So anyway, the study said, look, it seems like, I mean, we hate to say it, but this seems like mass hysteria. And the freaks and the pervs and the fags and the queers and the molesters exploded with violent vitriol to the point where Brown University tucked their tail between their legs, pulled the study offline, and I'm sure they're out there just begging forgiveness and wanting to donate to whatever, donate to AIDS research or something. Yeah. So they removed the article, and rapid onset gender dysphoria continues to be a growing problem, along with other forms of mass hysteria that seem to be throttling the minds of the nation on a regular basis. Now, the former head of the Centers for Disease Control, Tom Frieden, has been arrested on allegations of sex abuse. This guy worked for Barack Obama from 2009, was let go by Donald Trump, and apparently along the way he molested, groped, grabbed, insulted a number of women. He's currently serves as the president and CEO of a global health nonprofit, or at least he did, and turns out he's a perv, a creepy perv who liked to grab women. Politico's in trouble here. Oh, well, wait, let's go to reason number 1,144 before we run out of time. To get or keep your children out of the government schools, especially if you're in Montgomery County, Maryland, Montgomery County, educators and teachers, administrators involved in the Montgomery County school system want to provide condoms along with notepads and pens to the students at four high schools, Gaithersburg, Northwood, Watkins Mills, and Wheaton. Yes, the public school system has decided to provide condoms at four high schools. Well, that's what CBS in Baltimore reports, that the public school system decided to give condoms. Actually, it was people. It was men and women, educators and administrators who decided to start giving condoms to the kids. It wasn't just the system. They haven't installed artificial intelligence at the public school system in Montgomery County, Maryland. No, it was sexually deviant and perverted teachers and administrators who want to molest as many kids as they can, so they want to get the kids used to the idea of thinking about sex, and to do that, they give them condoms. You give a kid a condom, what is the kid going to think about? Exactly what the deviant teachers and administrators want the kids to be thinking about, because the teachers and the administrators are cruising the kids actively. That's what's happening. Now, some of the council members there on the student council in Montgomery County, they want to make condoms available at every one of the 25 county high schools, and others have insisted we should make them available in the middle schools as well. And those administrators, teachers, and members of the council should be investigated, identified, and arrested if it's found that what I think is true, and I'm telling you that's what's true. Do you know why STDs are going through the roof? It's because the kids in the schools are behaving like minks and rabbits, and so are the teachers. You read about it every day. So there, reason number 1,144 to get or keep your children out of the government schools because one of their teachers might give them a condom and then have a conversation with them about gender identity and dysphoria and other things. Now, let's see. Coming from the Truth Hurts file, this is the Truth Hurts file. Politico is in trouble because they wrote an article in which one of their authors said that Roy Cohn died from AIDS as, quote, a result of the decadent homosexual lifestyle. Oh, they actually said that. Roy Cohn? Uh-huh. Roy Cohn is a lawyer and a Republican. And kind of a just an all-around political muscle man. And he's been around for, like, since the 50s. Okay. He died of AIDS back in, when did he die of AIDS? He was one of the first people to die of AIDS. 1986. He was dying of AIDS before it was even cool. Roy Cohn was. And the reason he got AIDS was because of his decadent homosexual lifestyle. That's why he got it. And Politico reported that. And the whole world came crashing down on Politico, which is a left-wing organ, by the way. Now, the only reason they mentioned Cohn's decadent homosexual lifestyle was because they say he denied it to the end. And so I don't really know about Roy Cohn in that. All I know is he died of AIDS, so I assume, as politically incorrect as that is, when somebody dies of AIDS, I assume they're a homosexual. And nobody was upset at Politico for blaming his decadent lifestyle. No. They put the word homosexual in there. Had they left that out, they would have been okay. But they had the audacity to print the truth. To allude to the truth. That's all they did. Anyway, that article disappeared. It's disappeared off the face of the earth. Except you can go to therap.com. Where they say they keep uncorrected versions of everything, and they say that they will exist for all eternity on the Internet Archive here at The Wrap. Oh, that's great. And that is true, by the way. Everything you write and publish will exist for all of eternity. And on Judgment Day, depending on what you've written, you may just have to answer for that, okay? Every idle word, by the way. For those of you who don't humble yourselves... All right, what do I want to do here? Oh, here we go, from the Our Democracy file. Our Democracy. So I've been watching, who's the little guy on Fox? He used to wear the bow tie all the time. And it's kind of the mop top hair, and he's not that bright. And he's confused. I think his tagline is, I don't understand. And he furrows his brow, and he always looks confused and dazed and bewildered.
Tucker Carlson.
I've been watching Tucker Carlson. I don't know why. I guess I'm a masochist. I watch Tucker Carlson and I'm just going to admit it. I have been watching Tucker Carlson. I've noticed that he refers to, number one, the fact that he's bewildered by just about everything. And number two, he worships our democracy. He uses the term our democracy. This is dangerous to our democracy. This threatens our democracy. How should we proceed in order to preserve our sacred democracy? Tucker always says. So now I've got a file, the Our Democracy file. And this file will be dedicated to revealing the truth about how silly our democracy has become. Case in point, Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera. She's running for the U.S. House in the state of Florida, and she's best known for claiming that she was abducted by aliens as a child. That's right. She says, although she was kidnapped by aliens, she says that does not define her. you know what, Bettina? I'm really sorry. But as soon as you came out with the I was abducted by alien things, at least with me, that pretty much that did define you. I'm really sorry. I can't get past that. And you're running for office in our sacred democracy. Why? Because democracy is a joke. Democracy means that illiterate morons who live in their own little fantasy worlds could actually claim offices in which they govern my life. And I don't like that. I don't even want there to be a possibility that someone who claims they were abducted by aliens could end up passing laws that directly impact my life. The theme of my campaign, she says, is people above politics. Speaking of platitudes, she's the master of the meaningless platitude, and meaningless platitudes will get you very far in our democracy, our sacred democracy. All right, now, I do want to close. You remember I referred earlier, this is... I called this coming summer, back over Memorial Day weekend, I called it the summer of blood. And that was because I had not a premonition or anything superstitious. I just had a bad feeling about this summer. And I have to admit, it started because of a personal experience in my life. Over Memorial Day weekend, a business associate who I've known for about 10 years was killed in a single vehicle automobile accident for a no explicable reason. Crashed, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, he was ejected from the vehicle, and he was killed. And so that just, I don't know. That number one, it hurt. Because I don't remember that I ever had a significant conversation with him about God or eternity or heaven or hell or any of that. I just don't recall that I ever did. And so now we've made it through this summer of blood in Chicago and Baltimore and just all the bloodshed around the world. And the fact that the killing of innocent children in America has continued unabated and now unmentioned and unmentionable by the one party in politics that we all thought might be our only hope to do something about it, the Republicans. The Republican Party has been hijacked by people who refuse to even acknowledge that we're all participating in the greatest mass murder in all of human history in the summer of blood. Continues. And we get to Labor Day weekend. And yesterday, here at the McBurney compound, we watched a fellow human being die in a roadside ditch. Yesterday, a car crash right in front of the McBurney compound. And our daughter, our oldest daughter, Nicole, the bird whisperer, she was the first on hand to witness this tragic episode, and a comment really on the tragedy of human existence. Thomas Hobbes described a time when men live without civilization. And he said that the life of man is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short in his book, Leviathan. And as we've gone from Memorial Day to Labor Day and through this summer of blood, it's just reminded me of the tragic state of our existence and how we spend so much of our time joking around and just trying to avoid the harsh, ugly truth that our existence is tragic and precarious. And at any moment, we could be killed for no good reason whatsoever. Without any logic or reason or rhyme, and no greater meaning, it just simply comes to an end. And in regards to Hobbes, and this idea of living without civilization, the idea of living in constant fear, I don't live in constant fear of death. I mean, I'm not like mentally deranged where I'm paranoid about it all the time, but events cause me to think about it more and more lately, by the way, the older I get. And I just want to remind you in the audience that it is God, it is the living God and the knowledge of Him and His Word that civilizes us and protects us by knowledge and allegiance to Him, not just knowledge of Him, but allegiance to Him. And allegiance to the truth of which He is the author. That is what civilizes us and protects us. And by the way, that truth that God authored, that the protection of the truth goes even for the heathen and the pagan, in as much as they submit to the truth, acknowledge the truth, live by the idea that certain things are commonly understood as true. One example would be that every human being is endowed by their creator with the right to life. That would be, even, you don't have to be a Christian to believe that. You could be a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Muslim. You could believe that everyone has the right to life. And that will civilize and protect even the heathen. The idea that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, and there's a difference for a reason. Acknowledging that truth, whether you're a Christian or a heathen or a pagan or whatever, will help to civilize and protect you from the tragically precarious nature of your existence. But it is allegiance to the living God that will carry you beyond the tragic state of affairs and enable even the lowest and the most humble among us to overcome what is a tragic state. And so, I will sign off, I suppose. Anyway, that was a shock to the system to watch a fellow human being die in real time, live. And so it just gets you thinking seriously that things are serious, and I just wanted to remind you all of that. This is the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.